Welcome to episode 3 of The Unshadowed Thought with James Hall. Today we're going to be talking about the transcranial magnetic stimulation injury and what that looks like, how people experience it, and the evidence that I've found to show how it works, how it affects the body, and kind of the scientific body of evidence that I've gathered together to validate the injury. For those that are looking for a more concrete version of what I'm saying here today and the research to back it up, I've written an article in Mad in America called Can Transcranial Magnetic Stimulation Hurt You? And in that piece, I put links to all the research that I found and that Sarah Hancock Price helped me find to validate the TMS injury. So you can take a look there and see a much more simplistic layout with the evidence level linked up in the article as well. So with that being said, we'll get started. I think the first thing to think about and to kind of categorize mentally for myself, and I think it's helpful for others to do it as well, is to kind of group what we see as the injury into one picture of symptomology that's expressed from the TMS injury. So what we see primarily, almost everyone manifests with some form of worsening depression and anxiety. So you hear those clinical terms and it's kind of dry and hard to picture. So I had moderate depression when I started TMS, but after TMS, in the months following it, I developed depression so severe I couldn't function. Like, getting out of bed was extremely difficult. My whole body physiologically was depressed. I had no energy. I had no emotions, like complete anhedonia. There was no positive emotion at all. It just, everything was completely depressed. Another way to explain that is inhibited function. So all my mental processes were inhibited. My physical processes were inhibited. My emotions were all inhibited. Everything was dumbed down and limited. On the flip side of that is some people end up in a hyper-aroused state, even a state of cortical arousal, which their anxiety is absolutely through the roof. So I know there's people out there with extreme anxiety just from trauma and different circumstances, but the trauma that I see, or the anxiety that I see from the TMS injury, is so extreme it's not even human. People can't sleep. You know, they can't, regardless if they exercise, take medication, or like drink tea, like anything you can imagine to calm yourself that may help you sleep, they cannot sleep. They're in a physiological heightened state of arousal. So their anxiety response in their body is constantly being triggered, and they're wide awake and going and completely stressed out of their mind without reprieve. I've been in heightened states of anxiety before from work stress, say for even days at a time or even weeks at a time. Some of these folks don't get breaks for months or even years from being in this heightened state. So it's not a natural state that I've ever seen. It may exist out there, but we're seeing this regularly in people after they get TMS. And in such a heightened state, they're completely and utterly miserable, and they can't come down off it. One of the people in our group just got back some QEEG images that's showing her brain is just stuck in a state of arousal. It's just incredibly difficult to deal with. So those are two big main signs. We see this a lot in people with TMS injury. They seem to have one or the other. I can't think of any occasion where they didn't have either one. After that, everyone seems to have some degree of cognitive impairment. Cognitive impairment can mean a lot of different things. It can be not having a short-term memory or having loss of functional memory, so that when you're doing things, you get confused. So even though you can remember back a little bit, when you're going from one task to another, you can't remember exactly what you're doing. Or as soon as you're doing one task and someone distracts you, then you can't remember anything. You can't remember what you were doing, and you can't remember what the person said if they distracted you or whatnot. And then, like, there's story recall, there's all these different kinds of memory, and we've seen impairment to all of that. I think it's worthwhile to note that in ECT injury, we have this loss of long-term memories. So people may, if they're 30 years old, they say, I can't remember anything that occurred in my 20s. We're not necessarily seeing that with TMS. I can't think of one case where we've had that, although there may be. It's hard for me to remember everything all at once, but generally speaking, that's not occurring. I know it's more common with electroconvulsive therapy injury, but we're not seeing that in TMS. That's one difference. We're seeing a lot of irritability, fatigue, panic attacks, and increased suicidal ideation that tends to come with the depression and the anxiety. Whatever extreme gets pushed, there's increased suicidal ideation. Chronic headaches seem to be a big one. Many people have chronic headaches. And then there's this kind of part of the syndrome is this loss of balance or dizziness or nausea. We talked about tinnitus before on the last episode that I experienced. There seems to be, there may be a tie to kind of the inner ear, the auditory cortex, and the brain's ability to balance and to process its environment correctly. So, I mean, almost everyone seems to have some sense of some dizziness, balance issues. I started running into walls after TMS. I'd be coming around a corner and my shoulder would just clank into the wall. So one, I've lost some sense of balance. I've also fallen down times when I didn't expect to. I felt dizzy, but then my spatial perception seemed to be off as well. When I, for instance, if I'll reach for something, I'll hit my hand on the surrounding area, whether it's a table or a cabinet or a wall. There seems to be this issue with spatial perception now that I have, where I never experienced that before TMS, my TMS injury. Some of the other things we're seeing tinnitus, obviously, fairly commonly. There's hearing loss. We have eye injury and face injury. So there can be extreme swelling in the face in and around the site where TMS is applied. We've seen retinal tears and different eye injuries manifest as well. Different forms of tachycardia. So the heart, like there might be postural tachycardia where if you move too quickly or you change positions, your heart starts racing. Some people just have an increased heart rate to where their heart was beating at 70 beats per minute before. Now it doesn't go any lower than 110 or 120. And then of course, there's instances where it can jump way up into like 180 or 200 on a regular basis for people. So a lot of times it's with that cortical arousal and that extreme state of anxiety. One-time seizures have been observed in my group and by people that I've met that had TMS. Also, we've seen epilepsy. So people have developed reoccurring seizures that occur regularly for them that they have to deal with now, which of course is not in the literature. They say you can suffer from a one-time seizure while you're in the machine, but having developed epilepsy entirely, that is not disclosed in any way, shape, or form, as well as most of these other problems I'm mentioning. But that one, people get confused on that. There's definitely a difference there. Blood pressure problems, speech problems. I can speak pretty well on here, but I do get my words tied up and tongue-tied. In the past, I might confuse my words a couple times a year, like it didn't happen very much, but now I do it. I do it all the time. I do it on a daily basis. I do it several times. Sometimes if I have a lot of stimuli or things going on around me, it's hard for me to even make out a sentence. So that's become pretty significant and obvious for a lot of us. Muscle pain, weakness, tingling, cramping, fasciculations. So we've developed a lot of problems with our muscle activity. A lot of us have really severe cramping that we get that doesn't resolve very well and really has no reason for onset. I have fasciculations, and that means my legs' muscles constantly twitch. They don't ever stop. If you look at my calves at any point in time, they're just twitching. They never stop. And that's, when you look at it, it's really disturbing. I try not to think about it. I don't really notice it too much. I also have spasms that occur all over my whole body. I randomly get body twitches and spasms like in any given place. Sometimes it's painful. It's usually not, but it's alarming because I know what it is when it happens. And I know that I've never had muscle spasms before. Like after a lot of physical activity, I might have one or two in the week after, you know, but now I have them on a daily basis. I probably have 20 or 30 muscle twitches around my body that just happen randomly. And it's not normal. We also have insomnia that people develop, I think usually as a part of that heightened arousal state. But I've dealt, even when a depressed state, I dealt with insomnia where I just couldn't sleep. Ironically, when you're in a severely depressed state and your nervous system can't process the environment, you have panic attacks and stress reactions. And it's really unpleasant when you get both at the same time. When you're in a really unpleasant state, for myself, I start to get insomnia. And I know a lot of other people do too. So another really huge one is dissociation. I get depersonalization, derealization, almost 24 hours a day. I feel like I'm dreaming. Everything feels ethereal. It's been a really, really huge complaint for a lot of people because after TMS, you expect to return to this baseline where you feel human and you feel normal and you feel present in your environment. If you ask me, this may be the most frightening thing that occurs with TMS is that you're put in this agitated state cognitively where you don't feel necessarily like your own in your own body, or you're intoxicated, or you're dreaming. And the really freaky, scary thing is that when you get put into that state in TMS and they tell you it's going to go away, it doesn't go away. I'm over 3 years after my TMS treatment and I'm still severely dissociated. I still don't feel like I'm in my body. I still don't feel like my feet are on the ground. And a lot of people struggle with that. I know a lot of people struggle with it really significantly in the weeks and the months that follow TMS because they're expecting it to go away and it doesn't. You know, it's subjective when you tell clinicians that. They really don't know what to do for you and there's not a whole lot of treatments around it. So they tend to write it off. Also, I think in studies and research, if you tell someone, first of all, if you knew well enough to tell someone you had depersonalization, one, they may not get it. Two, they're not going to do anything about it. They're not going to blow it off and they're not going to write it up in the case study or the study notes. So that may be the most precious thing that we get robbed of is basically this incredible part of our human experience in our lives. And TMS takes that away and it doesn't give it back. I know psychiatric medications can as well. And I feel this is a really, really understated dark side of psychiatry and a lot of other medical treatments as well. There's been studies that show some drugs being regularly used like Benadryl and whatnot. They're causing these cognitive issues and early onset dementia. And I think a big part of that is dissociation. And that is not good. You know, it may be livable, it may be copable, but if we're looking at quality of life for our fellow human being, to me, it's completely unacceptable. It's incredibly unpleasant. And that's a massive player in TMS. So, I mean, if you're listening to this and you're considering TMS and you don't want depersonalization, derealization, you should think very, very seriously and very, very carefully about getting TMS. So next, there's environmental sensitivities to light, smell, sound, temperature. Basically, anything your body can process or do now can put extreme workload on your nervous system and your brain. So even what I realize is even digestion, like there'll be times where I'll be doing something and there's these different environmental stimuli and I realize that on an empty stomach, maybe I was fine doing that. But if I had eaten a lot, it's not okay. Now all of a sudden my body is not processing things well. My vision may get wonky. I start to have these increased side effects, this increased symptomology, just because I realized after a long time and a lot of reflection that my body is just under heavier load and it doesn't handle it well. There's really no other way to explain why it would be doing that at that time. So this is a big one. A lot of people start having panic attacks and they can't process their environment anymore. And they don't realize that that's because your nervous system is under load, your brain's under load, and the regular function it has of making temperature regulation, processing lights in your vision, and smell and sound all at the same time, and touch and sensations. These are all incredibly complex, data-heavy tasks that it's doing. And it's great when you're in perfect health and that all goes seamlessly. But when you've been injured and your nervous system is impaired, it now creates a burden and lots of unpleasant things happen, and you get overstimulation. So the generalized term kind of is overstimulation. I'll ask people, hey, are you getting overstimulated? And almost everybody has some degree of a problem with overstimulation. For me, I think it took like a year and a half to understand that that's what was happening. But when you look at the body and how it functions, and you understand how much information and how much tasking your brain does, you start to understand that that's what that is. Like it can't take on the workload that it used to, and this is the side effects, these are the consequences of that. Another big one is sensitivity to medications and supplements. So kind of along that same line, it appears that our bodies can no longer, a lot in lots of cases, don't handle medications in the same manner that they used to. This is a big problem for some people that have medical conditions and rely on medications. After TMS, they've become sensitive to those medications and have had to make changes or drop those medications or look for alternative medications. You do not want to go through that process. It is incredibly unpleasant, but that's a side effect. But it's an entire system sensitivity. So the same thing goes for supplements. I thought that I'd be fine taking supplements because they're relatively harmless and trying to use those to help my recovery. But what I found out is I would take certain supplements and I would have very extreme reactions. I remember one in particular I took and I couldn't sleep for a week. And that's happened to me several times. Caffeine, same way. Before I could drink a cup of coffee and I'd have some energy for a few hours and then I'd crash out. I'd sleep like a baby after I had coffee. Now, if I have a cup of coffee, I won't sleep at all. Maybe an hour's worth of sleep in like 2 days. I won't sleep well for 2 weeks, at least a week and a half. And that's after just one cup of coffee, one occurrence or one occasion. It's just a drastic change in lifestyle and expectation from what I used to have. Some of us also experienced TMJ, so jaw issues. There's been tooth pain. There's been mouth issues as well. Again, anything close to the site where you get TMS, there's a potential for problems in your physiology, not just like your neurology. The actual muscles and stuff can get bound up and there can be issues. I never clenched my teeth in my sleep before. I never needed like a mouth guard or anything, but I developed this really intense tooth pain. And my dentist checked my mouth out and he's like, you don't have anything going on there. I think you need a bite guard at night. And he said, I think you're grinding your teeth. And sure enough, I put the bite guard in and then my pain resolved. The pain's a funny onset. It just feels like a toothache during the day, even though you wake up and you don't have any pain. Apparently, that's from grinding at night and took me a while to figure it out. But that was a big one and it really freaked me out. I thought I was having some other tooth issues, but that's what it was. When I talked to people in the ECT community, I realized that it's a big thing with ECT as well. A lot of people clench and have teeth related issues with that. There are other symptomologies that come with TMS as well. There's a lot of one-offs. I've seen hormone imbalances that occur in several people, and maybe to everybody to a certain degree, but we don't notice that, or it manifests in different ways where it escapes our notice. But there's other things that I'm probably not mentioning. It's a really diverse set. I mean, almost anything I think that could result from neurological harm, you're going to get from TMS because that energy is diffused throughout your brain and can tamper with, change, or damage any part of your brain, from what I've seen and observed. Another one, lastly, is psychosis. So we have had a few cases of psychosis, people seeing things and hearing things that weren't there. It seems to be more prevalent the more extreme your TMS treatment is. And there's a few case studies in that, or at least one that I found online, and I posted that in my Mad in America article. So that's something to look out for as well, which is really unpleasant, but I have seen in several people and read about it several times as well. So it does exist. Yeah, the more I think, the more I realize there's some important kind of caveats to the symptomology I just talked about. One is back injury. So I had been doing sit-ups my whole life, in large frequency and never had a problem. But for some reason, after TMS, within a few months of finishing TMS, I had a severe low back injury. I think it occurred from doing sit-ups. It came in and around the time I had been doing sit-ups. I just thought, you know, that can't be TMS related, as it's just a completely different area. Physiologically, it's different, you know, different spot. I didn't feel anything during TMS down there. It's not an issue. But sure enough, when I looked into electrical injury, there is a higher occurrence of back injuries that occur after that. So the electricity that's induced in your brain can travel all the way down your toes, essentially, but it definitely manifests in your back, which can bring on back injuries, can spur back injuries. And there's research to support it. I was always suspicious about this just because of the timing and the severity. Like it's really severe, persistent low back injury with serious sciatica that it doesn't relent. I went to the doctors, they imaged it, and they're like, you shouldn't be in the pain that you're in, but I do see this from time to time. Same thing with the sciatica. With electrical injury resulting from TMS, there's, again, the severe sciatica that's persistent. It doesn't go away. I've been to physical therapists. I've done everything in the book, and all I can do is minimize it. I cannot get rid of it. The other thing I noticed was that my fluid intake, my water intake, was different than in the past. And what I mean by that is that I would get dehydrated a lot quicker than I would in the past. And at first I thought it was maybe the way I was eating or something. My food was taking up a lot more hydration, but I ended up finding that that was not the case. I always need to take in about twice as much fluids as I used to stay hydrated. And I was a runner in the past, so I had to pay close attention to my hydration levels and how I felt as a result of that. So I know, and I'm really in tune with when I'm getting dehydrated, and I noticed dehydration symptoms happening like really quickly, even when I wasn't doing anything. And then I increased my fluid intake and they would resolve. But when I did some digging and had some help from Sarah, I realized that our electrolyte regulation in our body has been inhibited. It looks like it's in regards to like a sodium ion channelopathy, where, I mean, down at the cellular level, our cells are no longer processing these critical electrolytes in the way that they should be as a result of this injury. And that was another thing that came together for me and made sense, because it was imperative. There was a lot of other members of the group who had severe problems when they got dehydrated, and they dehydrated more quickly. It seems to be another result of electrical injury, but it's very important. The other thing is, all these symptoms and stuff, they used to be in the past, if you had them at one time or another, there was something that you could do to affect them or to manage them, like anxiety and depression. You could eat well and exercise, and it would have some effect. Maybe some people didn't have a big effect. Maybe some people had a great effect and they were able to completely resolve this stuff. Same thing with any other symptoms. But the symptoms that we experience, they don't respond to treatment. There's almost no way to get out of this stuff or to minimize this stuff. It just, you work on it for a very, very, very long time, like a series of years, and you may get, you know, like 10% relief or like 5% relief. Where in a clinical setting or in a medical setting, you know, they'd expect you to recover in like 2 to 4 weeks, like for a severe injury. We're just not seeing that in these cases. And this is something that shows up in electrical injury and other case studies as well. So that's how we're seeing TMS injuries manifest. And this is across a large group of people that had publicly gotten TMS in a lot of different locations from different providers, different TMS providers on different manufacturers' machines, and by obviously a very diverse set of clinicians. This is happening also in different countries. We have people from the UK, Germany, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, almost anywhere, you name it, and they're coming in and they're reporting a subset of symptoms in that same group that we identified. And if I go back when I started seeing that this was a real occurrence, you know, I have hundreds of people experiencing the exact same thing who got the exact same treatment. They came out of treatment in the same period, this is a real thing. It's going on. And I started digging around for answers once I had established really well what our set of symptoms were. And after looking in a lot of different places, I looked at autoimmunes for a long time. I looked at brain injuries for a long time. And some of them were similar, but none of them really fit the bill well for an explanation. However, I ended up looking into litigation in a way, try to find justice for everyone that was harmed by TMS. And I ended up coming across the ECT litigation that was out there. And I looked into the court documentation. I looked into the set of side effects that the people that were injured from ECT had. And it was a really huge aha moment. They were almost identical. When I dug into the community even further, a lot of the nuanced things that I was seeing with TMS were manifesting in the same way amongst ECT harm victims. And that was a big aha moment. At the same time, I was looking at other medical device harms, other injuries that were occurring across a bunch of different places. I had watched The Bleeding Edge on Netflix. If you haven't seen that yet, please watch it. It's a little unpleasant and unnerving to watch, but you learn a tremendous amount of information from the honesty that's in there. I talked to a lot of lawyers about it and a lot of people, and it's just really authentic, honest look at what's happening with medical devices right now. It's a good place to start if you don't know much about it. But as a result of watching that video, I had reached out to the really rad women that had worked on some of the litigation and getting changes in government in regards to medical devices, and they're fantastic. They said, you should talk to Sarah Hancock Price. And I did that. And once I did that, first of all, she's brilliant. Second of all, she saw the connections right away and just started to work, giving me all the information I needed to see, all the research and whatnot to show what was happening with TMS. Or really what she was doing was showing me the truth behind low voltage electrical injury in general, and what was happening in the community of electroconvulsive therapy. And once I saw that, I realized there's a really serious, close connection to TMS. It's completely undeniable. And after reviewing all that material, you could easily come to the conclusion that TMS is just an evolution of ECT. It's wireless ECT. They're taking the same energy and transferring it wirelessly to a person so that they can call it non-invasive, when actually it's very invasive. And what they're doing is they are pushing technology ahead of the curve of treatment knowledge and efficacy. So they made a new treatment, they branded it a certain way, and they're utilizing it because, one, they don't even know how it works. They don't know what the therapeutic mechanism is. They can't tell you how it improves people. They just use it. And if you didn't know this, the same thing is true for ECT. The therapeutic mechanism for ECT is not known. So they dose a human being up with electricity, knowing that they should have relief from their mental health symptoms, but they don't know how they're doing that. And as far as I knew, that was illegal, and the FDA wasn't allowed to approve technologies or medications where the therapeutic mechanism is not known, but somehow it's been done with ECT and somehow it's been done with TMS. Because if you look specifically at what's supposed to happen, it's not proven. It's all theoretical. There's no real evidence to show that either of them work at all. They just go based on these arbitrary results that they found. That's just a huge problem, and they're just getting away with it. So back to my original point was that they don't know how TMS works, and they're pushing it down the marketing road to where they can sell it and market it before they don't even know what injury looks like. They don't know what harms could be. They haven't researched these things so they can get away with this stuff. So how do you prove that wrong, right? Like, so you have a treatment, you don't know how it works, but you see people are getting harmed by it. So how do you go to court and prove that it's causing harm when you don't even know how it works in the first place? You're putting the cart before the horse. And this is the problem, and it's an extreme problem. And when we back out and look at the big picture, we have to ask ourselves, why are we doing medical treatments where we don't even know how they work? And so how are we supposed to regulate those things? How are we supposed to make sure humanity isn't coming to extreme harm by those means? You can't do it. If you don't know how it works, you can't do it. So ideally, we are not supposed to be doing those things in the first place. You have to know what you're doing before you can regulate, control, or understand a thing, right? So this is the case with TMS. It's the case with ECT. And I'm pretty sure it's the case with a lot of other things. I think everyone is in a hurry to find a cure for something. And they're not realizing that if we're just give carte blanche to anyone who's looking for a cure, and then we just accept anything they give us as a cure, we're going to have extreme impacts to people and our culture, civilization, our friends, and our neighbors. We really need to stop and take a look at that. Is this really worth the price that we're paying? I mean, I want people to be cured of cancer too. I want these horrible things to just go away, or us to just rise above it and not have to deal with it anymore. But I'm not willing to sacrifice other friends and family to that end. I don't think that's a good idea. And it also, it creates this really big gray area, right? So how many people are being harmed by these treatments and devices, and how many people are being saved? Well, yeah, I'm sure you keep really good track of the people that have been saved, but what happens to the people that are harmed? You know, there's no dialogue in your doctor's office for being harmed by procedures and medications that they give you. You ever notice that? That's called getting fired by your doctor, right? Like you come in and you say, hey, I think you harmed me. I think this harmed me. They'll be like, I'm sorry, I can't see you anymore. And they'll kick you out. And that's a really unpleasant phenomenon that people don't talk about either, that we're going to talk about on this cast. But it just lends to this whole situation where we're not counting the casualties, but we're counting all the victories. And so there's no comparison, but the information is out there and we can get to it. And when we do, then we can count the real cost. We can make a real measure of, is this making a difference? Are we better for it? And answer those questions. But if that data and that information is skewed, we can't do that. And another question would be, why would someone want to skew that data? Why would someone want to make it unavailable? And why would someone not track? Why is someone not tracking the casualties, right? If I'm in a community and I love and care for all the people in this community, you better believe I'm going to track all the ways in which they're harmed or they die even, so that I can make sure it doesn't happen. But we're not doing that. You ever notice there's no narrative from that? It's just not a thing. I mean, we loosely do it in some circles. They track like heart disease and stuff. I mean, a lot of this stuff is done in autopsy, but when they are tracking heart disease, are they tracking the mechanism by which that happened? And that's the question, right? Like, we're all dying from something and we can keep track of that, like a condition, right? You can attribute a death to a condition, but are we tracking what's causing those conditions? Are we tracking the more subtle nuances of what's occurring? And is that too difficult? It's not too difficult. We track a lot of things in great detail, but are we tracking the important things, and are we cataloging and looking at the data on those? Something to think about. So I digressed a little bit. I think it was worthwhile. So let's take a look at the TMS injury. I identified that it's very similar to ECT and the symptomologies are virtually the same, slightly different. There's some important differences, but again, the treatment is different too, right? We're getting wireless electromagnetic field pushed through our brains versus a direct current electricity. And there's some great similarities and there's some differences. But here's what I found essentially is that ECT has direct current, and the damage done by ECT is caused by thermal transfer. So there's a heat buildup inside the skull that causes cell death and structural damage inside the human skull. But one of the big drivers of damage, if not the biggest driver of damage, is the rapidly alternating electrical field that is given off by the direct current. So here was the big aha moment after doing a lot of reading and research, is that that rapidly alternating electrical field is exactly the same thing that you're getting in TMS. So there's the direct application of electricity in ECT, which travels through, and that does thermal damage when it builds up heat. But the other mechanism of damage from ECT is the electrical field that it gives off. So it's not the current itself. It's the field that's given off. And that same field is present in transcranial magnetic stimulation. And that's why we're seeing the same harm and the same damages. So that rapidly alternating electromagnetic field, which also has an electrical field in it. It causes electroporation. What that means is everything has inherently, all human cells, all biological life has, all the cells have polarity. So there's a positive and negative. There's an electrical field around the stuff that comes from the electrons in their atoms, right? It's a naturally occurring thing. Well, when you alternate the polarity on those fields rapidly, it starts to pull them apart. So if you think about one cell and the cell wall, it gets pulled drastically in opposing directions. So it starts to pull apart when you do it quickly and over more time. But here, time is a function of nanoseconds. So over nanoseconds, the cells are being pulled apart. Well, if you're at a very low amount of energy, the cells will get pulled apart, but they won't break. And that can actually result in lasting damage, which is the cell walls become porous. So that membrane is there to keep everything in the cell operating as it's supposed to, and it's also there to make sure that no molecules from outside the cell come into the cell and mess up the chemistry going on in the cell. So we're going to get really advanced here. It's not important that understand the terminology really well. It's really just the magnitude that we're looking at. So at 20 milliamps per square millimeter of brain tissue, there's irreparable cell damage done. So that means there's cell death. So the cell walls are pulled apart so hard that they actually break and the cell dies. And when a single cell dies in your head, you may not have a big impact on your daily life or anything, right? But it is damage. It's irreparable harm. Brain cells don't grow back. Our brains can rewire around harm, but they can't grow back. So we're looking at 20 milliamps of energy going into your brain tissue. So TMS generates 1 to 1.5 Tesla, and that's the equivalent of 797,700,000 to 1,196,550 milliamps per square millimeter. So we're up at 40,000 times the amount of energy it takes to destroy a single brain cell. And that's the energy that's being passed through your head with transcranial magnetic stimulation for 20 minutes a day for like 2.5 months, if that's the schedule you're on. And that's at 1 to 1.5 Tesla. I think I've seen machines that go up to 3 Tesla, but we're way beyond the threshold for damage. And someone thinks it's a good idea to subject human brains to that. Of all organs, you pick the organ that is so complex, we know less than 1% of how it operates, and you're gonna expose it to energy that's 40,000 times more harmful than what science has observed. And even if you were under that 20 milliamps, there's still concerns about that, right? Your cells are still getting pulled apart. Just because they go back doesn't mean they're the same, but that's irrelevant, I mean, in the course of this conversation. So that's for the electrical magnitude coming off the machines and the treatment, right? But there's also a magnetic component, and magnetic energy can actually cause harm as well. I'm a little bit less learned in that area, but TMS machines generate 10,000 to 15,000 gauss, and the natural Earth magnetic field is 0.25 to 0.65 gauss. And if you look at like working standards, scientists have said, 5 to 10 gauss in a regular working environment is safe, but you shouldn't be beyond that. Like, so that's if you're in proximity to big electrical machines or anything generating magnetic energy, 5 to 10 gauss is what's safe, like the OSHA standards or some other standard I looked up on workplace safety. So even the magnetic energy is 1,000 to 1,500 times the amount of magnetic energy that's generally considered safe. So we have, two mechanisms that are influencing the physics in and around our body in a way that science knows absolutely and unequivocally is unsafe and causes damage to humans. So the only factor that really can reduce the harm being done is dissipation of these electrical fields. So TMS is literally held as close to your head as it possibly can be. We know that, right, from the motor threshold tests and stuff. Like, they can physically move your body with the TMS fields, which means it's having complete and full impact on you. But the further you are away from an electromagnetic field, the more it dissipates, so it has less effect and it rapidly dissipates. If you're far away from your appliances in your house and these other electromagnetic fields that are much smaller than TMS, you know, you won't necessarily experience harm, but you can see the potential there. So for those that are trying to understand how TMS harm works and how it manifests, this is the kryptonite here. Nobody can get around those facts that I just gave you. It's incontrovertible. It doesn't matter if they're telling you about the frequencies they use or anything like that. You're still passing this extremely high amount of electromagnetic energy through somebody's brain, which means you're destroying their brain cells and the physiology in their head. Now, it also, you can find in multiple places online, but when you have those electromagnetic waves, they can also induce current directly into what they're in contact with as well. So current, direct current, is also being generated in the brain. And when that happens, that current will follow the path of least resistance, and it can go all the way down to your toes. It can go into your back. It can go into your face. It can go anywhere. And the brain is like 70 to 80% water. So it's a conductor. So there's all kinds of harm that can occur on a secondary course of action as well from that. I mean, this is a really significant thing. You got to wonder in the manufacturer's manuals, scientific journals and articles and studies, why aren't they talking about this? Why are they not talking about the physics behind TMS? They'll talk about everything besides that. They'll talk about the frequency and these other things that they can manipulate when they apply TMS, but they don't talk about the legitimate physics behind it. And that's a big problem, right? That's where the deception lies. And I hope you notice this about science and medicine, is that the people in control of that information can easily twist and manipulate what they're showing you to make it look how they want to look, right? So if you're a safety board, or you're the FDA, or you're a regulator, and someone says, you know, hey, is this device safe? And they present to you all this information on the different hertz levels that they can use on it, you know, all these different parameters, but they're not showing you what's critical to physics and kind of this biomedical paradigm where we see the impact of just raw physics on the human body, then it has no value, right? Like, if you can't look at things from a fundamental perspective of this is how much a human body can take in terms of an electrical field, this is, you know, how much physics you can apply to a bone before it breaks, how much kinetic energy, all these different things, then you're going to have this big gray area, and you're going to have too much wiggle room for others to manipulate the situation, of which is, this is exactly what you're doing. If you look through a medical literature and different things and you're astute, you'll realize there's always information missing. There's always some aspect of things that aren't being expressed that should be. There are lots of times there's conversions in energy that are not being communicated as well, or are being tweaked so that it would be very hard for someone to get to the bottom line or the truth about what's going on. Things should be the exact opposite, though. There should be universal terms for how medical devices and medical treatments are expressed to regulators and to patients. People should know exactly what's going on. There should be no conversion. Like, you can't sell me a medical treatment if you're going to try to change the language in which you're selling it to me, and right? Like, so I was in banking, and the big bubble in 2007, 2008, when everything crashed, right? What was something that came out of that? There's this Truth in Lending Act, where irregardless of what a banker said when he was selling a mortgage, there was a piece of paper that he had to give his customer that they signed that says, this is your rate, this is your term, this is your payment. Like, this is the black and white of your loan, and this is not going to change, right? They had to do that because they were changing the language. People were being deceptive. They were telling the customer, this is your payment, $500. They wouldn't tell them that was an interest-only payment and that they would have negative amortization on their house if they made an even lesser payment or whatever, right? They just told them what they needed to hear to sell the loan and to get paid and to make money. And that's what we're seeing in the medical community. And it's completely rampant There's good people out there. Of course, there's good people out there, and I'm always going to emphasize that. But the problem is that there's no control and there's no reins put on the people that are profiteering from the harm of others, and it's completely endemic right now. It's just a huge problem. So there's another aspect of TMS injury that I want to cover, kind of along this line of reason, and that's the clinics. And what I found about the clinics was that these places, the vast majority of the ones that I've seen, they're all essentially like sales marketing adventures, right? Like they're trained to sell you on TMS. They're trained on exactly what to say and how to say it. And they're not trained on what TMS really is and the dangers, the physics behind it that we just mentioned. They don't know any of this stuff. These businesses are set up to profiteer and to make money. They're not set up to help their community. That's not the way in which these clinics pop up. I mean, you see the same thing with ketamine. Like, they're doing it to make money because, according to the survey or whatever the generalized information is about mental health, one in four people have a mental health issue or they're mentally uncomfortable suffering from depression or anxiety, right? So, one in four Americans. I don't even know how many tens of millions of people that is, but it's a huge market for TMS to make money. And that's exactly what they're doing. In essence, if you get critical and you look at it, TMS is a new technology that's dangerous, but no one knows how to evaluate how dangerous it is. So entrepreneurs are leveraging that to make money because they know that they're going to have this golden window to make a bunch of money before it gets proven to be harmful or has the potential to be proven to be harmful. And I've talked to a tremendous amount of litigators, lawyers, and whatnot, and they have the same problem with it. No one's litigated these clinics before and the manufacturers, so everyone is hesitant to do it. So it'd be a massive upfront investment and it'll be difficult to do. And pharma relies on the same things. They rely on the fact that no one's going to litigate them because it's too costly and it's too difficult. And TMS is it's the same way right now. Like it's like this gold rush. They're running to treat everybody as quick as they can, as fast as they can. All of the tactics they employ are all around sales and marketing techniques, and they're just trying to get as many people through those chairs as they can. Well, guess what? Fast forward 10 years when the first litigation is successful and this actually comes to the attention of the general public that it does serious harm and it's just a sham treatment. You now have tens of millions of people who have been severely and irreparably injured from TMS. And it's this invisible injury. It's not even like a broken arm or something when someone can recognize it. It's this cognitive impairment. It's this severe anxiety and depression. It's this damaged nervous system that someone looks fine on the outside, but it makes everything in their life extremely difficult and some things impossible to do. It's just a massive, massive impediment to people's quality of life and their existence. So I said a lot, I'm pretty happy with it. I'll summarize and add maybe a few more things here at the end. So the result of my time, research, and study and examination of myself and my own injury in regards to transcranial magnetic stimulation is that TMS causes primarily a low voltage electrical injury resulting from the electromagnetic field, an electrical field that's passed through the human body and brain. And secondarily, it causes like a post-concussive syndrome. So it causes repetitive concussions to the human brain and nervous system as well. And then it can also have physiological injuries to the face and head and ear and neck and back as well, is what I've seen. The treatment is essentially very dangerous. It causes this kind of invisible injury and also causes spellbinding, which is where when you cognitively impair someone, you take away their ability to see that they're harmed. So you can convince them that they're better or they're healed and that they should just go away and go do what they're doing. And the one thing I didn't emphasize earlier in the cast was that the majority of things are on a delayed onset. And if you go to the article that I wrote, you go to Mad in America, you can look through the documentation that I have, and electrical injury primarily has this delayed onset. So in the weeks and the months following TMS or ECT, this is where we see the full breadth of the injury. And it can even go it can even manifest later than that. But another reason, or another way, that the clinics are able to get out of acknowledging the harm, and think about the studies as well. When they did studies for this stuff, did they follow up and look how their patients did in the past? No, they didn't, right? It was just an immediate falling. If you asked me what happened after TMS right after, I'd be like, you know, it didn't really work for me, but everything's fine. In the weeks and the months following that, I fell into a very severe condition that was crippling, that took away my ability to do everything. I couldn't even take care of myself. Like, it'd be the worst, almost the worst case scenario, but it slowly got worse and worse. And as the injury manifested in my nervous system and my body over time, we saw the full breadth of the injury. So think about that. Think about that clinically in terms of what it would look like in a study and what evidence would be reported from a manufacturer when they're trying to prove efficacy and prove safety to a regulatory board or a governing body. It's very easy for them to get away from it. So again, part of the danger of TMS is that you have this delayed injury. So a delayed invisible injury, and probably lots of people that are trying, that don't care or are not interested in this, they look at that and they say, well, that's just French for him saying you can't prove it and it's not really real. No, you can prove it. It is real. It's absolutely provable. You just have to apply scrutiny to it. You see the same patterns, the same things happening to everybody over and over again in the exact same scenario. It's unequivocally true. There's no doubt about it. You can absolutely prove it. And that's what we've done. It being an invisible injury, these injuries are not showing up on diagnostics. And that's also documented about electrical injury as well. Electrical, low voltage electrical injuries, they don't show up on diagnostics. So they're subtly affecting the microstructures of the brain and the nervous system. And people are expecting to just get an MRI and see that stuff on there. But it's not. It's not going to be on there. It's too small. MRI it's macroscopic in a way. Like it shows big injury. It shows big structure. It doesn't get down to the cellular level. Remember, this is an invisible energy that's passing through the brain and it's affecting individual cells and it's diffuse. It's spreading throughout. So, I mean, just like psychiatric medication, we know for a fact there's severe and serious change and harm that occurs as a result of using them. And yet, there's no scans. There's nothing that's showing evidence of it. Same thing with post-concussion syndrome, like professional NFL players. They're acting erratically. They have these extreme things that happen to them. And we know they're suffering from post-concussion syndrome, but yet there's absolutely no diagnostical medicine that can show it except for an autopsy. So an autopsy, you can take the brain out, you can dissect it, you can look at it under a microscope where you can look at the individual cell structures, and then you can see the harm that's done. So that's what's happening here as well. And with that, I think I covered the bulk of what I wanted to cover. I definitely got the important concepts out there. I can't thank you enough for tuning in and taking an interest in this. We're all in this together. We've all got skin in the game, whether you know someone that's been hurt by TMS or someone that's interested in the treatment or anything else, any other medical treatment, medical device, or psychiatry. We're really all facing the same problems as a community. And it's important that we understand each other's problems, because when your problem comes for you or danger comes for you from the medical community, whether that's making a decision about treatment or dealing with the after effects of a treatment, what I've seen is there's similarities across all these different treatments and all these different harms. So when we learn about each other, we're really learning the well-being of ourselves. And that's one of the biggest things I pulled away from this. I did not figure out what happened with TMS injury by just strictly looking at myself. I knew myself well. I looked at what was happening with others that were harmed by TMS. And then I leveraged other communities that were dealing with medical harms. And those are the ones that solved the mystery for me. Those were the ones that gave us the information we needed to move on past just some mystery illness or past gaslighting from doctors that say, you're not harmed, you know, just go do your thing. You have some other neurological condition. You don't need to worry about TMS having harmed you. And so with that being said, I think the next cast is going to be about recovery, what I've done to recover what makes me feel better, what I respond positively to, and probably what I haven't. And I think the things that I've heard from others, as the cast goes on, I'd like to have a lot of people that are on a healing journey from TMS and other injuries, so we can all share. People don't respond to TMS in the same way. They don't respond to recovery modalities the same way either. So I think it's really important, and I stressed this in the first cast, that diversity of thought and diversity of experience is incredibly important if we're all going to try to heal together and learn from each other. So with that, take care of yourself. Have a good night.